Well, Bob, that I'm still somewhat in a state of, of confusion and of such deep concern and shock that I haven't been able to really get myself functioning like I would like to. This is a real fact and one that's very troublesome. I was at the, Mrs. Humphrey and I should say, were at the Chilean embassy yesterday for a luncheon. By the way, I don't believe I've accepted one lunch in years to be away from the capital at noontime, but the Chilean ambassador is a very kind and gracious man, and he'd been to my home state of Minnesota, and I thought I ought to reciprocate and at least accept an invitation, and I was there with Ralph Dungan and others Mr. Dungan being the former, or the late President Kennedy's assistant. And the news came to us that the president had been shot, at that time wounded, and of course, like others, we hoped and prayed that the wound wasn't as serious as the first news reports indicated. And of course, I received a telephone call from the White House, and I was told that the president had passed away, that he'd been killed. I then, all at once, it dawned on me that the closeness of relationship. This is something that I've been reflecting upon. I'd worked with President Kennedy, and I'd been a colleague of his in the Senate, and as we all know, I'd been a contestant with him in the primaries, and then I became a lieutenant of the president's in the legislative program, and I worked very closely with him and had a very friendly and warm personal relationship. But when that news came that he had been taken from us, that he'd been shot, I stood alone in the hallway of the embassy, and I'm not ashamed to say I just couldn't contain myself. I just broke down and sobbed because it seemed like a bit of life had gone right out of me. And then to try to tell others to come to the table and to tell the guests and the host that we'd lost our president was a very, very difficult assignment. And so during that day of yesterday and this morning, it all seems like it just seems like it's not reality. I keep hoping that somehow or another that this is one of those moments that just isn't true, that it's unreal, that it's an ugly dream. But of course it is real. We have to face up to it. Mrs. Humphrey and I were at the airport at Andrews Air Base last night when the president's body was brought back. I still see my old friend and the president's intimate personal friend Dave Powers there with his beloved friend President Kennedy, and Larry O'Brien, Kenny O'Donnell, these wonderful men that worked with President Kennedy, and they were there with him to the very last moment. They were there as they tenderly and lovingly brought his body back to the nation's capital. And then I saw Mrs. Humphrey and I saw Mrs. Kennedy, that poor lady, what she has gone through, losing her baby and now her husband, and yet the strength and the poise that she demonstrates is an inspiration to all of us. I haven't had a chance to see her yet. Mrs. Humphrey hasn't, but I know that she realizes and knows that we are with her in spirit and in prayer and in sympathy. So we later on during the night moved to see the new president, President Johnson. I want to say a word about that, Bob. Is it all right just to
very much
go on and talk to you about it?
Yes.
All during my service in the Senate, I've been a close friend of President Lyndon Johnson. You know, it's very difficult to change terminology because I've always thought of President Johnson as Lyndon. But now it's President Johnson. And I know of his sterling qualities of leadership and his unique ability to perform the art of politics. He really is a competent tactician, a leader, born leader. He loves public service. But I want to say one other thing about him. I watched him as the companion and the and the supporting arm of President Kennedy, our late and beloved President Kennedy. And he was intensely loyal to President Kennedy. Even when there were little things said that might have tried, that could appear to divide them, he never let that happen, nor did President Kennedy let that happen. I was with them morning after morning at breakfast, as you know. Every Tuesday morning we'd have breakfast at the White House. I sat right next to President Johnson as the vice president then, and right across the table from the president. I know the exchanges that took place. I've kept little notes of this. And the warmth of feeling, the friendliness that was there, and the give and the take, the good humor, and yet the also the seriousness of purpose. I was there, I know, you see. I literally rubbed arms with the vice president, now the president, and looked right into the eyes of the president, right across the table, President Kennedy. And I want to say now, so that there can never be any doubt about it, that the loyalty, the faithfulness to the man of, that Vice President Johnson at that time had to President Kennedy was beyond doubt. It was marvelous. He was dedicated to him. And the Vice President was dedicated to President Kennedy's program, and he will continue to be. I happen to know that he will consider one of the memorials that we can leave or can give to President Kennedy is the fulfillment of President Kennedy's program, because this is the living memorial. I watched Vice President Johnson, as Vice President, I should say, go to great limits, almost beyond his strength, to fulfill tasks for President Kennedy then. So this spirit of understanding and friendship must be clearly understood in the American public, and I think it is. And I want our friends overseas to know, too, that in President Johnson, you have one who worked alongside of President Kennedy. You had one that is dedicated to the same program, to the same international commitments, to the love of this republic, to the love of freedom, political freedom, all the freedoms. And I must say that while our forefathers had such foresight in giving us a political system where there can be a transfer of power without the contest for power, without a struggle for power, where we have political institutions that can endure almost any kind of pain and crisis, that God Almighty has been very good to us too. We have men that are trained for these jobs. And in America, with Lyndon Johnson, the President of the United States now, we have a man that is trained for the job, that is an experienced leader, that is dedicated to political life and to the principles of democracy. We're fortunate, very, very fortunate.
Thank you very much, Senator. And perhaps you'd like to stay for just a moment, because I'm going to switch to Peter Hackus out at President Johnson's home, Les Ormes. Peter, are you there?
Leaders were at President Johnson's office for about 45 minutes, where we had a very intimate personal talk with the new president, pledging our loyalty and our support and our helpfulness. I went back to my own office. I just sort of wanted to be alone a little while. And while I was there, the phones kept ringing. I had no secretarial staff there because I had asked them to go to their respective homes. My office people knew President Kennedy, and they were terribly upset with this tragic loss. Those phones kept ringing, and they were all long-distance calls from back out in Minnesota, practically all of them. One or two other calls from friends of mine, New York and Chicago. And without exception, the calls were filled with love for the late president, and with grief, with sadness. I remember the final call that I took just before I went to my own home here in Chevy Chase, Maryland, was from a gentleman who was a taxi cab driver out in St. Paul. He had just finished work, and he'd gotten home, and he called up, wanted me to know how he felt and how his family felt. And he wanted me to tell the family of President Kennedy how he and his family grieved for them. You know, this is the kind of thing that I think tells the story of love and affection for a man, more so than even headlines or anything that those of us in public life can say. And I just went home filled with emotion because of not only the day, but because of what people had told me, just folks that I know back home.
We are accustomed here to considering the president as the man next door, as our neighbor. We have a much warmer, much closer feeling to them, we always thought, than people around the country. But from what you say, that may not be true. Perhaps President Kennedy was the man next door to everyone.
I think that's very true, and also I sometimes feel that in the expression of freedom which we have in America, in this very free freedom that we have, that sometimes we give people the feeling that there isn't much respect for public office or even for the high office of presidency. But you know, when the moment of crisis comes, like as it did in the Cuban crisis, or when a moment of tragedy comes, as it did yesterday when President Kennedy was taken from us, then all at once you see the American people as they really are, a thoughtful people, a considerate people, an emotional people, and a warm and friendly people, and their love for their president is genuine and sincere, very, very much. I remember when President Roosevelt passed away, and I remember then the feeling of loneliness and personal loss. And I can remember when President Eisenhower was stricken with a heart attack, and I remember the feeling of concern that came across the whole nation. And now I have witnessed this deep personal feeling that people have about our beloved late President Kennedy. And I can honestly tell you, Bob, that when I got the news, I felt that just a part of my life had left me. I didn't even know I felt that way. That's really the truth. I knew I thought a great deal of the president, and my relationships were extremely cordial. In fact, just Wednesday of this week, we were joking and having a great time. I was walking with him over to the White House and in the garden, and having a wonderful, wonderful visit, just like two friends would have. But then all at once, when a terrible moment of tragedy comes and death takes your friend, then you realize that something is gone. And it's so, well, we articulate fellows find no words to really explain it.
And yet with all of that, Senator Humphrey, as you said about President Johnson, when he steps into the job, he no longer is Lyndon, he's Mr. President.
That's right, and he takes on entirely new responsibilities, and in a sense, he becomes a new person. I know that he will become a fine president. And I say this with all respect and with great respect for the one that has departed, that President Johnson has fine and great qualities of national leadership, of leadership for this nation. And the people throughout the world should literally be prayerfully grateful that out of the plain folk of this country comes a man that is so extremely well qualified for public service and for leadership as President Johnson. And I look forward to working with him. I literally held his hand last night and pledged my personal as well as public support to his efforts, because I know he needs it. Believe me, he needs it in this job.
And you are one of those who has the extremely trying task of keeping the government going at a time when actually you don't feel like going much yourself.
That's about right. Well, we'll keep the government going, and we have jobs to do and work to do, and a brave people and a big country and a strong country must be able to not only to express its sorrow and its sympathy and its love and affection, but it must also stand strong and carry on. And I know that the greatest tribute, the greatest memorial that we could give to the memory of President Kennedy is to carry out what he started out to do. And he did so many great things. He revitalized our national power, and he brought to us a new respect throughout the world. He contributed so much to the cause of peace, and he has worked so hard for human dignity and human rights. All of these pledges and promises and all of these beginnings, now we must continue. And I'm sure that we're going to be able to do that, because we have a continuity of leadership. Isn't that marvelous that we have a continuity of policy, philosophy, and of program? I think this bodes well for the nation.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Humphrey, and thanks for coming up here, and thanks for a very revealing insight on something most of us really haven't had time to think about, had neither the time nor the will to think about.
Well, you know, just as you were speaking, I was saying to Bob McCormick here that I was racing through my mind the very same thought, that this is 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. This is the Emancipation year, so to speak, centennial. And President Kennedy has taken such a brave and noble position on the issue of human rights. Not a position that was radical or that was extreme, but one that was within the spirit of the Constitution and within the spirit of our philosophy of life and of our democratic way of life. And I'm sure you realize and recognize with me that the then Vice President and now President Johnson was one of the most brilliant and one of the most dedicated and sincere spokesmen these years of President Kennedy's administration for the doctrine of human rights and for civil rights. It is most interesting to me to see how this man from Texas really stood up on this great and fundamental issue of our time of human rights. I remember President Johnson's speech at Gettysburg. I believe it was right around the 4th of July, as I recall. I placed that speech in the record. I was going to place it in the record, and someone beat me to it in the Congressional Record, as I recall, someone there first. But that was a remarkable speech. I want to get that out and read it once again, because I was inspired by it at the time that I read it. This is the speech of President Johnson's in 1963. It was in the spirit, really, of the Gettysburg Address of Abraham Lincoln. And both of these great emancipators, Abraham Lincoln and President Kennedy, were taken from us by the assassin's bullet. And as you may recall, President Lincoln was succeeded by President Johnson.
Yes,
President Johnson was a border state man, as I recall, from Tennessee. And he tried to carry out the policy of reconciliation with the South of Abraham Lincoln. And here is President Kennedy being succeeded by President Johnson from Texas.
In a situation that
very much the same.
Very much the same. Haven't we overlooked the fact that President Johnson had a great deal of the responsibility for getting through the last Civil Rights Act, the first one we'd had since Reconstruction days in 58, I think it was? Wasn't it?
I should say so. The first major piece of civil rights legislation to pass in over 80 years was passed under the leadership of President Johnson. And I want to say one other thing. Well, that's when President Johnson was majority leader in the Senate. He worked closely with the Republican president. I think we ought to understand that while we have our party differences in this country, that I've never known a responsible leader in America that didn't put his country above his party. And the warmth of friendship and the closeness of relationship between the former President Eisenhower and now President Johnson is a matter of record and history and is a living fact today. And what a great thing this is, because President Johnson can draw upon the experience of President Eisenhower and President Truman. President Truman was a warm and intimate friend, and is today, of President Johnson. And all of these great men who have given so much to their country, including President Hoover, who is a man that is in years now, they can all give so much now to our new president in advice.
Well, thank you once again, Senator Humphrey. And everything you say was quite correct. And so now I think we'll give you a rest and go back to Russ Ward in New York.